If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings and the love of the One Divine Heart. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, He Asked, What Do You Want? And you said, He asked, What Do You Want? And you said, and that's for you to fill in. So let's take a deep breath and call yourself forward in your true presentation, the truth of your nature. What is the truth? Bottom line of your nature. Tonight, as we work, we're going to be doing a lot of clearing, which means sometimes I have to clear my throat a lot because a lot of us have a lot of fear around presenting who and what we are and being okay with the desires that arise. So excuse me if I have to clear my throat, and I'm going to I think I'm going to have to do that right now. Excuse me. You see, that's what all that blocking is. When you try to speak and you feel like you have a lump in your throat, or you have a heavy weight on the upper part of your chest, sometimes it manifests as asthma. Sometimes you keep creating congestive problems like bronchitis. I used to manifest a lot of pneumonia. And these are all representative of stuffing a lot of feelings that we need to make okay to be and to allow to express. If we can't get to the very bottom line of what we're all about, how are we ever going to ask God for what we truly want? And we're told that God fulfills the desires of our heart. That's true. And God always fulfills the desires of our heart. The trouble is, most of us ask out of the personal heart, and not the sacred, true heart. We ask out of the conditioned sense of what we think we want. But the heart has its own voice. And the heart will out and will speak and must speak now, because we are coming to a time on the planet when heartless action will no longer be tolerated. Mother Earth herself will spew us out of the mouth of creation in one form or another if we don't get real. And sometimes it's really gut-wrenching as well as heart-wrenching to get real. So let's look at what's underneath all of the surface desires that we say we want. But as soon as we get them fulfilled, we don't want them anymore. We divorce a person we swore we would love forever. We leave that ideal job that we worked so hard to get up the pecking ranks to be in that position. We got tired of the ulcers and the stress that maintaining that level of lifestyle and material proficiency brought forward for us. And we find ourselves often at a point in life where we just don't know anymore what we want. And I don't want any of you to ever get to the point where you just throw in the towel and give up and say it's hopeless, because it's not. On the contrary, you get to that point when you come to the end of yourself, and for the very first time, there is every hope in the world that your true desires now can be outed and granted. So again, take a deep breath and evoke and call forward the truth of your being. Just call it out. Above all, I want to know the self that I am. I want to stand naked in my own insight, transparent to my own probing vision. Self-awareness begins with understanding yourself as a human being. How can you transcend the human state if you've never, ever occupied it? So just lay aside all of the idealism and be yourself as you are right now in the human form, in the state and stage of life in which you find yourself. And look at where you find yourself. Because all the desires have directed you to where you are right now today. You are sitting in the fulfillment of all of your desires up until this moment. And if you're not really fulfilled and content and filled with bliss and that sense of absolute wholeness and fulfillment, you've got more. There's more that needs to out. There's always more, infinitely more. God's life is expansion, and we are part of the corporate life of body. We're the body of God. We're the cells of God. We're the light emanations of God. We are part and parcel of God. So there's infinite potentials and infinite expansion. So just take another deep breath and ask for the clearance of any clutter, superfluous desires, disappointments, anger, hatred, because your desires were somehow not met in the way that you had hoped or expected or even demanded. They really were, because it's the underlying desire that is driving the disappointment. Because underneath the superficial desires that disappointed you is the deeper desire that had to have that surface disappointment reveal that what you were going for wasn't it. If it had been, you wouldn't have been disappointed. Because we all have one primary appointment, and that is to marry the beloved. We are all promised and betrothed to the beloved. And until we rest in conjugal union with the divine beloved, we will never know fulfillment. And that's why the mystics of all ages use romantic and sexual metaphors for divine union. Like in the Book of Solomon, for example, the Song of Solomon. Very sensual, very erotic. But it has to do only with the union of the soul with God, with spirit. So now we're going to take a little flight of fancy here. We've all heard the fairy tale about a magical genie appearing out of an Aladdin's lamp, ready to grant three wishes. I'm sure as children, we all fantasized about the three wishes we would ask the genie to grant. I know I did. But, you know, try as I may, I could never wish big enough. I could never really quite get that wish that I really, really wanted. At least not then. So imagine, if you will, that you were granted three wishes by this proverbial genie. Oh. Remember to read the small print. Because along with your wishes will come all the results and repercussions of each wish. So be very careful what you wish for, because your wish will be granted. Actually, this could be a very fun and, I think, enlightening journaling exercise that you could do after we go off the air. But if you want, take some time with this and really ask yourself, what wishes would I want to be granted if I knew for certain they would be granted? And, you know, we all know what we don't want. But practically no one really knows what they do want, or what would truly make them happy, fulfilled, and content. And that's because we ask from a mental and sensual level, and seldom, if ever, from a transpersonal level of spiritual awareness. So you can look at it this way if you like. Desires determine direction. Desire determines direction. My desires determine the direction of my life. So your desires will draw you in a specific direction. So take a look. Where are you now? Can you see how your desires brought you exactly to this place in life? Go and have a good look. It's desires that form mind. Mind is simply a bundle of desires. And desires give rise to thoughts. And our thoughts give shape to our life. In fact, every experience gives shape, contour, and color to our life. It's as if we start out like an artist with a blank white canvas. Then we decide what colors and images we wish to bring to life. And our life is actually our artistic creation. Like this, like an artist uses a paintbrush and a palette of colors. We use our thoughts, our desires, our imaginations, to rise out of our life experiences to create the portrait of our life. We use our five senses in the same way that an artist uses color and a paintbrush. So every experience drawn through our five senses gives life a specific definition and character. Every desire draws us to a destination. So have a look. Which direction has your desire drawn you? Have your desires drawn you? Because we don't just have one. The mind is filled with desires. So are you really ready to receive what you say you want? I mean, practically speaking, are you ready to receive what you say you want? A lot of people say they want to win the lottery. But we can watch on TV these people who have won a lottery and their lives become a living hell. Why? Because they haven't learned to manage finances with the little they had before. They haven't learned how to direct their desires in a way that works for them. They have no knowledge in how to manage money or to ward off all of the distant cousins that suddenly appear and ask for a handout. They don't even know how to discern a person who's coming forward with a true need from a person that's coming forward to use them. So their lives become completely destroyed. But they said they wanted to win the lottery. So we say we want a lot of things, but in practicality, do we have the capability, the level of maturity, and the knowledge, the practical knowledge of how to actually utilize and receive whatever it is we say we want? So how does your present life situation reflect your aspirations, your desires, the things you said you wanted, and your readiness right now to receive more? And how do your daily habits and conversation line up with what you say you really want? I can be with a person for maybe 5 minutes listening to them talk, and I can tell exactly what they really want in life. The same way that you can tell when someone is really in love, because they're not going to be able to talk about anything but the one they're in love with, and their relationship, and their plans for the future, and when they're going to get married, and so forth and so on. Well, isn't that true? So what you truly love is always before your mind. It's always in your thoughts. It's always in your auric field. And you're not going to find very much conversation with people who are not on that same wavelength. That's why the mystic usually lives and walks and lives alone. They have to. There's very few mystics on the planet. What's a mystic? It's someone who only wants union with God and lives for God, lives in that communion, that intimate interplay between the lover and the beloved. That is the path of the mystic. So the mind is composed of desires. And the desires may be quite noble: to awaken, to realize God, to become enlightened, wise, to selflessly serve, and so forth. But if you take a look, all of these are arising from the personal sense of selfhood, with its spiritual laundry list. So this incessant mind stream, which is a stream, a collective stream that we all tap into, needs within each individual to be wedded to the inner sound current, which is the Shabd, or the living word of God. It's the sound of God, the cosmic sound that you hear in the center of your head. And it is the roaring of the holy names of God. The I am that I am. And it's only by singing and chanting or repeating the holy names of God that carries the mind stream home to the divine worlds within and beyond time, space, and causation. So the light may illumine the mental body. We can look at light as pockets of information. And it may illumine the mental body with knowledge, even wisdom. But only the divine sound current can carry and convey soul beyond mind and concept into transcendental ecstasy. So in the beginning, the meditations are on the light and illumination. But the more advanced work is always with the sound current. You need the light and the sound to merge with the divine beloved. So most spiritual paths will lead you to the light and use light. But only the inner circle, the most esoteric teachings, will talk about the sound current. And if they don't, they simply will not take you any further than the higher mental realms. They will not take you beyond. Because to merge with God, you have to go beyond thoughts and concepts and beliefs. When you merge with the sound current, you transcend the mind. You go into mindless ecstasy. That's why Sai Baba teaches everybody to sit and sing congregationally. They chant the many, many names of God in all the different languages. And all the people from the different castes sit together as one big family. Nowhere on the planet can you see such a diversity of people as in Sai Baba's ashram. You'll have an atheist sitting right next to a God-realized person. You'll have a street sweeper sitting right next to a Maharaja or a queen. You'll have all these castes melded into one family of humanity. And they're all singing the names of each other's chosen form of God. The Muslims will sing about Jesus, and the Christians will sing about Krishna, and the people who worship Buddha will sing to whoever. I mean, it's just incredible. And Sai Baba said that when you are singing these divine names, you are not thinking, you are not identified with your body, you are not aware of who you're sitting next to. You're completely transported into another world. You're in bliss. No mind, that's bliss. No mind, no desires. But beyond the mind with all of its desires is awareness, and awareness is wisdom that arises out of the truth of your being. It's not arrived at by thinking. It's arrived at by expansion. Expansion is the divine life. Expansion of what? Life, truth, awareness, bliss, presence. So that is why in this age, when we have very little time to do anything, the name of God is the most precious thing that you can hold in your mind throughout the day as you do your work. You offer your work to God. You remember the names of God. And whenever you have a little point where you're not needing your mind to focus on your work, you chant the name of God silently in your mind. Om Namah Shivaya. Om Sai Ram. Anai Hu. Hu. Sat Sri Akal, Hari Rama, Hari Krishna, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Hari Om Tat Sat, Soham. There's a bazillion different mantras. Pick one and use it. And that will wed your mind with a transcendental living word that will carry you to truth and bliss and beatitude. So most spiritual approaches leave soul at the midway point because they involve the mind, ideas, beliefs, concepts, images, and so forth. And you can transcend the mind only through the sound current of God, the living word of God, and never through a mental approach. So it's necessary to transcend the mind and work above the level of thoughts, beliefs, and concepts to arrive at truth. The mind is composed of desires. And that is the way you can think of your mind from now on. A bundle of desires. But beyond the mind is the bliss of pure awareness. So when you are following a spiritual path that is primarily focused on attaining enlightenment or light, the spiritual objective is self-focused. It's upon personal accomplishment and attainment. And so we could liken it to a form of spiritualized selfishness. The I want is still part of the orientation. Now, Sai Baba says there are four kinds of people who come to God. The first category is the category of the desperate. These are the people who are in material want and need regarding matters of money and health. God will grant their wishes, and usually that's it. Off they go. They forget about God and they go off into the world. They have money, they have health. That's all they really wanted from God. So God grants those wishes. The second category are the ambitious. These are people who desire some material success or romantic relationships or job promotions or progeny or whatever. And God grants them these things, and that's that. They get lost in material success, or they get lost in their attachment to their relationships or their children or whatever, or their position in life, and they forget all about God. The third category are the seeking. Those who are the seekers of spiritual knowledge and self-realization. Now, God directs them to a suitable mentor or teaching or a guru. Now, they may or may not stay on the path. They may not hold in with a spiritual discipline until they attain God-realization and liberation. So, they have to do the work. They have to prepare the place. They have to be able to receive what they say they want. Self-realization. They have to do the study and the spiritual practice to acquire the spiritual knowledge they say they're seeking. So that path people can go either way. And then the fourth category are the awakened. Those who are the awakened knowers of God. And to these ones, God grants full divine liberation and merger. So again, the four categories of those people who come to God are the desperate, the ambitious, the seeking, and the awakened. So do we want God? Or do we only want what God can give us? What is it? Because only those who desire God alone through pure love and devotional ardor will be drawn into that intimate divine union. Kind of a sobering thought, huh? I think about it. If God is love, and God is love, how can you come to God in any other way but through love? So I'm going to tell you a personal story now, because I have been a devotee of Satya Sai Baba in this life since 1969. I recognized him immediately as my guru. I did not know at the time I had been with him in his previous incarnation as Shirdi Sai Baba, where I'd been a young Brahmin boy. And I had been sponsored by an English theosophist and brought to America, where I taught for 10 years as a guru. and then came back after 10 years to Shirdi Sai Baba. And he said, you'll be born one more time. You'll have an incarnation in America as a woman. And you will come to me at the age of 28, and I will grant you liberation in that lifetime. And so here I am. And everything he has told me, he has fulfilled. He has given me. So, very often, when we were called in for personal interviews with Sai Baba, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, up until 2000s, we had access to Sai Baba where he would call us in for interviews. And almost invariably in the early years, he would turn and ask anyone in the group suddenly, what do you want? And that's very, very hard to answer, because when you're looking God Almighty, an avatar is literally God Almighty in visible form. That's what an avatar is. You know that he has the ability to grant anything that you're asking, anything. In fact, he looked at us and he said, look at these hands. He held out his hands. He said, these hands never take. They only give. Swami, he always calls himself Swami. Swami has the ability to give you anything you want. What do you want? And most of us are like deer in the headlights. I mean, what do you say? You're just kind of like dumbfounded. You're just, your mouth's open and you're just kind of staring at him. Because who asks these kind of questions that has the ability to actually grant you what you want? Now, he knows everything. He says he doesn't read you. He knows you because he dwells in your heart. He's present in your mind. He is the inner master. He is the God form that dwells in your heart. Not as, you know, just the form Sai Baba, but as every name and form of God you've ever worshipped. He takes the form of your beloved, whatever that one is. And so he knows you inside out. He knows your past, your future, your present. But still, he plays the game, allowing you to come forward in your own knowing. And so he'll ask you, what do you want? I remember one red-headed, freckle-faced American guy, young guy. Swami asked him that, and Baba, and the boy said, I want Brahmayana. I mean, he could hardly say it. He much less know what it meant. Brahmayana means God, wisdom. And Baba kind of looked at him, and he said, Brahmayana, don't you really just want Swami's love? And he burst into tears, because, yeah, that's what he wanted. He wanted Baba to love him. So when I was in my first interview with Swami and he was asking people those questions, in my mind, I didn't answer him out loud because he didn't ask me directly, but I knew what I wanted. I wanted to merge with him. I wanted God realization. I wanted to completely merge with Swami. But I was young. I had my whole life before me. I also had a daughter and a husband back home in Santa Barbara. So what I was asking him for was very inappropriate at that stage and time in my life. And so he laughed at me. He said, lazy. Do some work. And I said, well, what kind of work, Swami? And he said, any kind of work. Do desireless work, nishkama karma, desireless work. And then he looked at me and he said, you dance. Well, I had been a professional dancer in a dance company, and I was still taking dance classes, so I thought maybe he wanted me to continue my career as a dancer. But that wasn't what he meant at all. It took me many years to figure out that what he was saying was, do the dance of life, like Shiva. You know the statue of dancing Shiva, Nataraja? Spin and dance and let your hair fly in the wind and spin out worlds while you're dancing. Be the divine dancer. Dance through life. Don't take things heavily. Be the divine dancer. But of course, I didn't know it at the time, and I was terribly offended. I cried and cried and cried because he's called me lazy. But what he was really saying was, You have incarnated to be a server of humanity, and you want to leave? Do some work. You came here to help people find God, didn't you? That was what I said I had come in to do when I was 5 years old. So be about the work of God. Do your duty. Do your dharma. You have a child to raise. You have a husband to serve. You have a community that needs your wisdom, your knowledge, your light. Get busy. Set like a bump on a log and one for liberation. You're already liberated. That's in the bag. Now go out and earn your keep. Do some work. So that's what happened to me, and that's what I ended up doing, although I didn't understand any of it at the time at all. I didn't understand what he was saying. It's sometimes has taken me 10 years to understand a dream or something he's told me in an interview. Not an easy thing. So, most spiritual objectives are self-focused, and most time when we come to Sai Baba, we're self-focused. We're all about personal achievement, accomplishment, attainment, and personal enlightenment. Very few of us ask to be put to work. Very few of us. So, Sai Baba will say that when we say, I want to know God, he'll say, drop the I want, which is ego desire. Drop the to know, which is the mind. And God alone remains. So drop the I want and be whatever it is you say you want. Be it. You are it already. It's just a matter of you choosing to drop all the nonsense and just move to what it is you say you want. So in the year 2000, I was again in India in one of my many stays for some months in Baba's ashram. And Sai Baba gave me a direct experience of this lesson. Sai Baba always says that he gives us what we want until we want what he has come to give us, namely liberation itself. And he said that most come to him for pedicures and promotions, and very few come to him wanting what he has come to give, spiritual liberation. What is that? It's freedom from the wheel of karmic rebirth. You're in this trap that keeps recycling you again and again and again to this hellacious place we call third density earth, like a reform school. It is a reform school. It's to reform us into divinity. So I had come with a woman and her nurse from London, a woman in a wheelchair with MS, and my colleague, Solariel, who's been with me for many decades, a co-worker. And Sai Baba had sent us prasad, which prasad is something that Sai Baba blesses and sends to you. Usually it's something to eat. And in this case, they were chocolate squares. And he sent us a message via Isaac Tigert, who is the man that used to own the, Anyway, he was the one that, Hard Rock Cafes, he's the founder and owner of the Hard Rock Cafe chain. And he was the one that did the financial backing and designed for the super specialty hospital, a huge palace of healing that Swami had constructed at Prashanti Nilayam. Anyway, we figured we would be called in with Isaac and Keith Kretschlow, who was the architect for the super specialty hospital, because they had recently come, he had recently come from London, and the two London ladies that we were had brought to Baba. And so we ate our chocolates and went to bed. And in the ashram, lights are off at 9 p.m. And so we lay down on our cots. And there were four ladies, and we were two to a bedroom, or two cots in each bedroom with a bathroom in between. And all of a sudden, I was awakened with Sai Baba's face appearing close to mine, and he was asking me in a very strong voice, "What do you want?" And I had no idea what I wanted at that moment. I was just like so shocked. But I, you know, kind of came to my senses and I said, "I want to be a Christ." And he said, "A Christ is a level of consciousness. Do you want that?" And I said, no, Swami. He said, "What do you want?" And I said, I want to be a master. "Master is ego. You want ego?" No, Swami, I don't want ego. And so I asked him several other things, and he showed the destination of where every one of those desires led. And it was always some form of limitation, some form of ego definition. And finally, not too far into the conversation, or interrogation, I would say, I said what I really wanted. I said, "Swami, I want liberation. I want what you've come to give, liberation. I want to merge with you." To which Baba said very strongly, he brought his face even closer to mine, he said, "If I give now, are you ready? Will you take it if I give now?" And I knew that I would die. I absolutely knew that my body could not hold and contain the power of what he wanted to give me. But I also wanted it, truly wanted it. And so I said, "Yes." And I meant it. Yes, yes, yes. So Baba disappeared, which I took as a sign that he was very pleased with that answer. But what happened was that this fire began. Oh my God, this fire began in my body. I leapt up out of the bed, and I went in the bathroom. I tore off my clothes, and I started pouring buckets of cold water over my head, because that's how you do showers in India, at least in those days, that was it. I kept pouring buckets of cold water over my head, and the fire gets stronger and stronger. And pretty soon it was 4 o'clock, and we had to go to out for Naga Sankirtan, which means you sing bhajans, you march around the ashram singing, men on one side and women on the other, singing the holy names of God. So it was cool then. It was January, I think it was, January, which was about 70 degrees and, you know, enough for a light shawl, but certainly not hot. And I was on fire. So I remember walking with Solariel away from our dormitory building, and it kept getting hotter and hotter, and as I got closer and closer to the bhajan area where we would sit for bhajans, I was getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and I got really scared. All of a sudden, I got terrified. It shows you how illogical this stupid body consciousness can be. I got scared of all things. I should have known that he was, you know, burning out my impurities and granting my what I had truly desired. But there was something primordial and a survival instinct that rose up in me at the time, and I was really scared. And as soon as I expressed that to Solariel, the fire started to recede. And then I was like devastated, because I thought I had missed it. I thought I had, you know, blown it. I missed my opportunity. Sometime later, I had an opportunity to ask Sai Baba about that. And he said, no, that I did not miss my opportunity at all. That he had, in fact, granted me liberation. And that experience was the burning off of the final residual of desire that was locked in the cellular memory. It's like we are inhabited by our karma, by our past conditioned desires and activities and everything we've done out of the the false sense of self gets lodged in our cells, and we have to be purified of that. And so the fire was the burning off of the dross that prevented the full occupancy of my Ananda body, my bliss body, the Ananda Sharira, or the Ananda Kosha, or the Zohar body, as it's called, the fifth of the five bodies that grow out of the other levels of the light bodies that we inhabit. And so I was experiencing that burn-off. And after many, many decades of faithful spiritual practice and 3 to 6 hours of meditation a day and just really working hard to do what I could do to prepare myself to receive what I had asked God for a long time ago, I had paid off unbeknownst to me, because you can't see your light body. You can't tell how well you've done. You really have no index to whether you've succeeded or failed. You just kind of have to surrender the whole kit and caboodle to God and hope for the best while being a really diligent initiate of the higher life, a real disciple. A disciple is one who places themselves under the discipline of the master to be living an initiate life. An initiate is one who is entering into greater expansion of light and awareness. And so being initiated does not make you an initiate. Doing the work in which you call yourself forward into the very level that you would embody and inhabit. You call yourself forward into it. You call the lazy parts forward. You call the parts that are resistant forward. You bring the mind who wants to dart off everywhere forward. You bring that lazy spirit that would rather just lie in bed and sleep than get up and meditate. You bring it forward. And so initiate has to constantly initiate the activity that draws them forward toward that which they say they want. Every initiate is initiated because they want to realize God. They want to move into what is called soul transcendence. To be soul transcendent, you have to live above the mind, above the ego, above the personality, above the desires of this world, above the ambitions of this world. You have to initiate yourself into the higher light by self-initiated action. And that takes discipleship, which is a commitment to the discipline of the higher life. No discipline, no initiation into the higher. You have to do the work. And it's interesting because we're surrendered, at least that's the desired state, is to be laid down, yielded at the feet of the Lord, where you recognize that God alone is the doer and animator and activator of everything that moves through your body-mind complex, but yet you still have to do the work. You have to do your dharma. The dharma of a spiritual seeker is meditation, study, repetition of the name of God, and selfless service. You can't get away from these things. I don't care what path you're on, it's the same regimen. The same regimen, exactly. You meditate, you contemplate on God's word, you study God's word, that is to say, spiritual literature, and you serve. You've got to be contributing to life in some way. You can't be self-focused. Self-focus is really hell. It's living out of yourself, beyond yourself, that is bliss. That's why the immediate payoff of service is joy. Do something for someone, you're joyful. People complain, they're having all these troubles, and please send me the light because such and such and such and such is going on. It's because they're so focused on themselves. Self-focus is hell. It's a burden. Get over yourself. You'll find an incredible lightness of being if you forget yourself entirely and look around and see who you can love on. Who can you love? Who can you smile at? Who can you brighten their day? Who needs to have a little lift of their spirit? And you don't drop the energy. You take it to the bank. You take it to the post office. You take it to the grocery line. You take it to Walmart. Whatever you call your places that you shop in your country. We have lots of Walmarts here in America where you can buy everything under one roof. Take it there. Give people your place in line. Help elderly people lift things and reach for things. And give people who have fretful babies your place so they can go before you. Pay for somebody when you look they're struggling to find enough money to pay for their groceries. Pay for their whatever. Get out of yourself. Give, 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 give. And in that way, every time you get out of yourself, you transcend your drama, and you give beyond what you think you can, you have initiated yourself into greater union with God. Because, obviously, watching Sai Baba, that's what he does. He gives. You could not give Sai Baba anything. He even told us not to give him flowers. In India, it's quite a... You always bring a garland for the guru, or you bring fruit or something. Baba didn't want us to do any of that. In the early, early days, he would bless the garland or the flowers and toss it back to you. Or if he gave him candy or fruits, he would bless it and give it back to you. But he would never take, never take, never take, and never ask for money, ever, 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 ever. He forbade us in the Sai Baba groups that were started around America to have anything to do with money. Everything was to be given freely. Everything. And if we had a need, you know, if there was a need for the center, you know, for example, to have the rugs cleaned or whatever, we would have a box put in a separate room where each devotee could go in quietly and privately and put some cash in there or not. So nobody was embarrassed. If they had no money, they didn't have to feel like everybody was watching them. And no checks, so nobody knew, you know, who was putting the money in there. That's how we handled finances. And so that's how Baba wants us all to live. To have morality is more important than money. He says your most valuable asset is good character. Good character will live beyond your body. That's the true fame that transcends this world, is when you have a good character. And to have good character, you have to have a word and a heart and a behavior that line up congruently. You can't say one thing and then do another. You know, you have to be true, true-hearted, and to watch what you speak. Not to talk very much. Not to create all kinds of relationships with all kinds of people. If you can't find good devotee company, stay by yourself. Keep company with God. Because your company will corrupt and spoil you faster than anything else. You become like the people you live with, and you become like the people you associate with. So be very careful. It's so easy to tarnish your good name and your character in this world. So I'm just sharing with you things that Sai Baba has taught us, things that I have experienced, and what it was like to be in the presence of literally a real genie. Beyond a genie, the maker of all genies. The empower of all genies. And it was interesting because whatever we would have a desire for, Baba would materialize it sometimes just as a spontaneous evidence of his love. He said they weren't yogic powers, they weren't magicians' conjurations, they were none of that. They were simply his nature and his way of expressing his love. And of course, to the doubting ones, he would manifest something that was totally impossible. And I told you the story of the little boy that he sent to Mecca by opening the side of the wall, and the scene opened into the plaza around the Kaaba, and he was able to join his cousins for 2 weeks. And I think I told you about the three people who he resurrected from the dead. And I think I told you about the person that he drew back from through the wall, opening the wall with a wave of his hand, and a person who had passed away came back into the room to assure the grieving relatives and wife that he was very, very happy and that he was fine and they should let him go. Yeah, all of these things. I've seen many, 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 many miracles in my years with the Sai Baba. I'll share more. I'll share more of them as he gives me memory of them. I've had so many experiences that they all get jumbled after a while. So it's good that I have this opportunity to share a few of them with you. But to know that he's in your mind, God is in your mind, God is in your heart, and all good desires, what's a good desire? A desire for God is a good desire. That's a helpful desire. And it is God himself, herself, itself, that gives rise to Godward desire in your heart. So if you have a desire to merge with the Lord, to realize the Lord, to love the Lord, to draw nearer and dearer to the Lord, that desire itself is coming from the Lord. And in that way, you can make your mind holy by constantly generating thoughts that involve the Lord, listening to stories about him like the stories I've told this evening, reading books of other people who've had direct experiences with the Lord, sharing these experiences. This is all part of purifying the mind so that the mind takes on the color and shape of the Lord. The mind actually will take the form of your devotion. And when that happens, the Lord will actually be able to appear to you physically and tangibly wherever you are, because your mind has taken a shape that the Lord can then inhabit. That's why you sometimes are given meditations where you visualize and draw in your mind's eye the form of your chosen beloved Lord. It's a very good meditation, because the Lord will inhabit that form at some point. Sai Baba said that the Lord takes the form of our devotion. That's why our devotion needs to be single-pointed and pure, so that the whole mind stream flows as one uninterrupted intention of devotion and love to God. Offer everything into that stream of devotion, your every thought, word, and deed. Ask God to occupy you fully, that everything that comes from you comes purely through him and his arising within you as the purity of light and sound, which is divine love when it's seen manifesting through you and me. So when you're in the living love of God, you are manifesting the divine light and sound. And that's what we're here to do. So what do you want? What do you really want? And so I hope this has been helpful. I bless each one of you that you may indeed have the fulfillment of your true and deepest heart's desires. And may that divine destiny imprint that you carry from the very heart of the all that is be fulfilled according to God's highest plan for you. And let's go out chanting Anahi. Deep breath. Anahi. Divine blessings and grace to each one of you. Adonai.